and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. President Salva Kiir calls on tourists to come to South Sudan.
Today, with great pride, I announce that the findings of this census to our nation and the international community is that it has brought us to number one.
And more than 10 people were killed during protests across Kenya.
There's no need of kill. It's not good. They could have leave these young guys to protest. Talk with them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has released the results of an aerial survey of South Sudan's national parks. The assessment of wildlife, stock and human activity show that each year millions of white-eared cob, Mangala gazelle and reedback migrate across parts of the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai attended the launch of the report and has this report from Juba.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir says the country is home to one of the largest migrations of animals in Africa. Last year, the country did an aerial survey of the land around the Boma and Badinglo National Parks and Jungle region referred to as the Great Nile Migration Landscape. At an event on Tuesday, Kiir thanked the Ministry of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism for working hard to protect the country's natural resources.
Today, with great pride, I announce that the findings of this census to our nation and the international community is that it has brought us to number one. The total wildlife population in South Sudan is estimated at 5.8 million. Mabruk, Rizima, Timbra, you must keep increasing them, not decreasing the animals.
South Sudan's Minister of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, Rizik Zakaria, encourages tourists to visit the country's national parks.
We are sending this message that we are a country to visit based on these marvelous findings. In the today events, we are celebrating the findings of only 10%. And by the way, Boma and Bandigulo constitute only 10% of our protected areas. We have other 16 protected areas plus other tourism aspects. This finding constitute only 10% of the entire protected areas of the country. Hopefully soon we will be inviting to the unearthing of the rest. I'm quite sure such events will continue as long as we are still digging deep.
Charles Wells, the chief of operations at the non-profit conservation group African Park, says his organization is committed to working with the government of South Sudan and local communities to protect vital ecosystems in the country.
As this migration crosses the border into Ethiopia, we should also coordinate our efforts to safeguard the shared national assets regionally. Traditionally, local communities sustainably harvest the migration antelope species for their own use. Any conservation intervention therefore needs to support this use, because these communities are the custodians of the landscape and its wildlife, and have been for generations.
The government of South Sudan and the African Parks signed a 10-year agreement in 2022 to manage the Boma and the Badinglo National Parks. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
From Juba, we go to Eastern Equatorial State, where some children in Torit have abandoned their homes and are on the streets and markets. The children say alcohol, parental neglect, and domestic violence forced them to the streets. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Joshua Isaka Elias is the country coordinator for Calvary Ministry, a faith-based non-profit group that supports street kids. He says poverty forces some children to walk away from their families.
We have this situation also where some of them are from broken homes. Maybe their mother is into alcoholism and even sick herself, and we pick them from the streets. The mother abandoning them right on the streets.
One street kid says his parents' fighting drove him to the streets. We are only using his first name to protect his privacy. Amin says he was tired of seeing his parents fighting every day.
My father beats my mother every day when they are drunk because of food. My mother drinks alcohol and my father too drink. So whenever my mother and my father are drunk, they fight. That is why I ran from home.
Joshua is another one of the boys on the street of Torit.
Sometimes we go to market and look for food. Sometimes we don't get food even in the market, and the big boys, sometimes they beat us and they don't give us food. You wait until someone finishes food, then you eat the remaining. I don't go to the same restaurant, but I go to a different, and the people there, sometimes they will give you food if they are good, and sometimes they will not give you.
Torit restaurant owner Zura Yusuf says street children have no support.
They say their parents don't support them. Some say they are orphans. That's why they come to the street. Some say they don't have food at home and their parents don't pay them to school. That's why they come to the street.
Grace Alice Batia, who works with a faith-based nonprofit that helps street children, urges parents to take care of their children who could become the country's future leaders. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
From Torit, we move to Sudan, where the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces has created a humanitarian catastrophe. The UN published a report earlier this year saying that during the first 8 months of the fighting in Sudan, between 10,000 and 15,000 were killed just in El Geneina, the capital of West Darfur. Joshua Cruz is a Sudan researcher who says the international community has done very little for the people of Sudan.
And the way that they've used famine as an instrument of war. And so that's come really now to look at the situation of the current war, where according to the Klingendale Institute, 2.5 million people will likely die from famine-related causes by the end of September. That would be the largest famine the world has seen for 40 years. And what our article does is trace how that famine has been produced by the warring parties, both the Sudanese Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces, and by the inaction of the international community.
The UN adopted a resolution on the situation in Sudan. The folks at the State Department here have been warning RSF, are we warning them not to attack Al-Fashir? Several leaders from both sides have been sanctioned. You still look at that as inaction from the international community?
Well, Jim, as well as I do, the international community is very good at talking and not so good at action. So let's take each part of it one by one. If we take the American government, what the American government has done is sanctioned some low-level RSF commanders. But what it has not done, and has no intention of doing, is sanctioning the leadership of the RSF, and most importantly, sanctioning the people who provide their money and their guns. And that is the United Arab Emirates. And the reason that America will not sanction the United Arab Emirates is because it needs the United Arab Emirates to be on side against Iran and in favor of Israel. And so what the US government is doing is it is allowing its geopolitical priorities in the Middle East and the Gulf to trump the needs of millions of Sudanese civilians. So that's the problem with the US approach to Sudan. Now, if we come to the UN, the UN agencies have made a decision to recognize the Sudan Armed Forces as the legitimate government of Sudan. This is despite the fact, John, as you know, that after the coup in October 2021, the Sudanese Armed Forces lost all legitimate constitutional authority in Sudan, and the AU withdrew recognition from SAF. Yet still, the UN agencies are harbored, they're staying in Port Sudan, the administrative capital in the northeast of Sudan, They are paying administrative fees and taxes to the Sudanese armed forces who are using that money to go and commit atrocities against civilians. They are paying them for each convoy that goes out. The convoys are run through trucking companies, often owned by SAF. They are renting property, often owned by SAF. They're putting money into the Sudanese war machine. And the Sudanese army, rather than allowing access to the populations that need it most, who are most suffering from famine, which are largely in Kordofan and Darfur, it is blocking access for the aid and humanitarian supplies to the most needy people in the country. And rather than the UN saying, you know what, we're going to deliver the supplies anyway, it is totally technically feasible to deliver from Adre into RSF held territories, from South Sudan into South Darfur, into West Kordofan. Rather than doing that, they are timidly and placidly accepting what SAF is telling them. And so SAF is using the humanitarian aid as a weapon of war to starve out RSF held territories. And the UN is complicit in that.
When you're talking about the US government not doing enough, the US Special Envoy for Sudan, Thomas Perillo, spoke very strong against the atrocities being committed in Darfur, and even threatened to, you know, put more punitive measures on the leaders of the rival groups.
We all agree that the government is talking. What they're not doing is doing. What they're not doing is putting sanctions on the people supplying weapons and money to the RSF, which is the United Arab Emirates, and they're not doing that because they care about Israel more than Sudan. That is the basic facts of the matter. Tom can jump up and down and talk all he likes. He can have endless meetings with Takadum and Hamdok. The reality of the situation is they are not willing to do what it takes to stop the massacres that are occurring in Fashion.
In the backdrop of a situation where these two rival groups are using food as a weapon, what should be done?
I think we have to be realistic, and we have to say that there's a long history of using famine and using hunger as weapons of war inside Sudan. What has to be done is that the UN agencies, the international community, the NGOs, the national organizations have to sit with a single voice and demand cross-line and cross-border access. The other thing that has to be done is there has to be genuine, massive levels of funding to the people who are actually providing aid on the ground in Sudan, which are the emergency response rooms. And thus far, the money going to those rooms is not sufficient. And it's being channeled not from donors directly to those rooms, but via NGOs who are making people wait. They're delaying things with endless levels of bureaucracy. And what we need to do instead is directly have money from donors to the emergency rooms. The donors, USAID, needs to put its money where its mouth is and actually support the Sudanese people and not hide behind bureaucratic red tape.
That was Joshua Cruz, a Sudan researcher who recently co-authored an article entitled Sudan Starves. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Coming up, young men and women protest on the streets in Kenya. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Parts of Kenya's parliament building was burned today as thousands of protesters against a new finance bill entered and the legislators fled. Journalists saw at least three bodies outside the complex where police had opened fire. There are reports of others being shot or killed in other locations. Protesters had demanded that legislators vote against a bill imposing new taxes on East Africa's economic hub, where frustration over high cost of living have gone for years. Protests are being reported in other towns and cities across the country. Away from the heart of the protests near Parliament, reporter James Shimanyola has been speaking with people on the streets about today's events. He was on Juja Road, east of the capital, Nairobi, and many are sad and upset about the violence and deaths.
I'm now on Juja Road in Nairobi, seeking views of Kenyans.
My name is Lucy Mwangi, and I'm a hairdresser, and I've been saddened by the effect that has just taken place in Parliament. People have died, and it's sudden that the bill has been passed. But the killing of people will never be forgotten in the history of Kenya.
My name is Lucy Widera. I'm a businesswoman. I'm struggling as it is. Everything that has happened across the country today, I support it. I'm happy about everything that has happened, because if the higher people are not going to listen, we have to act for them to understand we are serious about the change that we want. Reject the finance bill, period.
My name is Andrew Miela. There's no need of kill. It's not good. They could have left these young guys to protest, talk with them.
My name is Samuel Yagunda. No, it's very sad. Because those people are not armed. They are just common people. So to kill somebody, that is a crime. The solution is to agree both sides, whatever it will be happen, or to give the solution. If the people are claiming for something, let them get their right.
My name is Gracious. I'm feeling so sad of what is happening in Kenya now, because our leaders should do something about it. We voted them in, so they should do something. We send them there. They have to make this tragedy for us people to follow.
My name is Elvian Baraka. I think what I can say about what's going on, about the riots and everything that's happening, is I don't think they should be shooting people and killing people, because people are trying to air their views, and they're trying to talk about what's happening and what's affecting their lives. So I don't think the police are supposed to shoot them. And I also think people who are striking on the parliament, they should not riot and throw stones and do other things that are not supposed to be done.
I'm Cyrus Duku. I'm a very sad citizen today, very sad. They have killed our innocent children for nothing, for protesting, peaceful protesting peacefully, but ultimately we will be a victor.
Those were voices of Kenyans speaking from Nairobi. My colleague James Shimanyola collected those audio. Malawi has started investigation into the cause of a plane crash that killed Vice President Saulos Chilima and 8 others on June 10 in northern Malawi. The investigation by a team of German experts comes after Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera said last week that he had asked foreign governments to help probe its cause, despite investigations launched by the Malawian military. Lamek Masena has more from Blantyre.
Malawi government spokesperson Moses Kunkuyu said Sunday the experts will look into several areas leading to the crash of the Dunia 228 aircraft, including the condition of the plane and circumstances. The military plane was carrying Vice President Saulos Chilima and 8 others to the funeral of a former cabinet minister in northern Malawi, crashed on June 10. the plane went missing the previous day. Soon after, it was advised not to land at an airport in northern Malawi because of bad weather. The arrival of the German experts comes after Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera said last week that he was puzzled with what caused the crash of the plane he has long used. Chakwera said he had asked foreign governments to help probe the accident, despite investigation being carried out by the Malawian Defense Force. Michael Kayatsa is the executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, one of several organizations in Malawi that asked for the independent investigation into the crash. He welcomes the start of the investigations.
However, it's important that the government, you know, should not interfere in any way in the investigation. This should be, you know, totally independent investigation, so that whatever comes out of it should be credible.
The sudden death of Chirima bred a lot of conspiracy theories in Malawi and abroad, with some suggesting it was an assassination plot. Last week, police in Malawi arrested lawmaker Kamlepo Kaluwa and rights activist Boni Kalindo for circulating messages on social media alleging the plane crash was planned. The two were charged with cyber crimes and were expected to appear in court today, Monday. But Kayata said arresting those expressing their views on the plane crash would prevent some people from giving information to investigators.
That's why we have issued a statement that strongly condemning the arrest. Because what this arrest will do is to get an atmosphere of fear at a time when we need, you know, to open up and freely come out to provide information of what they know about the accident.
Malawian security expert Sheriff Kaisi said transparency is needed in such investigations to win the confidence of Malawians regarding the investigators.
We need to know them, that if they are from Germany, which company are they from Germany? And what are the track record that they have been doing the same similar job, for example, investigating such accidents, for how long they have done that? And what are the reports that they have?
Kunkuyu said two of the investigators are from the German Federal Bureau of Aircraft Accidents Investigation, while one is from General Atomics, a company that has taken over from the manufacturer of Dornier 228 aircraft. Lamik Masina, VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Yeah, yeah. This song is a special dedication to all the mothers out there, as a sign of appreciation, as a sign of love. Mawa, Mwana Minga.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. We now leave you with Mawa and the song, Ya Mama.
Ashanita taban waratai minana suker itageni hani sana kanana gikore katiana mimotoro kaman sekete itageni kore kore kanana gijere jere ashankede ana mawaka au kukisi kanana tala hayan itamagi numbilel ashambes itader arufana numkev akila ana gisa to chase away my nightmares. You always manage how to put a big smile on my face ita ani mana geni beid mi mashake worila ana hajatana arufi dunya de mafi haja bitimu ana bidafata kide ana deru worileta ana kuna kuna de
haja bitimu ala nabi worileta mafi maalgi beini kia fana bishilita ya mama. Yeah, mama.
ya shala fisika acha nyomtani uwa bitala umazaita ubirudu iyalto wakamambe nafsa teriga awal meteresa ana likode ya uleita itageni alimana wanusu kalam hagiga haja almatai keda na makutu foko gelba itageni alimana douru genisa itamasiku wana jiani shala degika acha nkida ya mama ana kiwari leita mafi haja bitimu lana biwadi leita mafi mahal gibenu giyafana bishilu ita fi ena tai ya mama ita ze malaika fi haya tai mami ita ya ubaraka kani tarudu kuna degumu foku dugu ina warila umataki gala nagi dugu ita
Kani tarudu guna deu kama numataki say ha. Kani tarudu guna deu kama numataki say hey. Kani tarudu guna deu kama numataki say ha.
We have been listening to Mawa and that beautiful song praising his mother. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbeli Abaro, and engineer Cornelius, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Digital advances are at once a tremendous boon for people and societies everywhere and one of the greatest security challenges of our time. According to a joint statement by over 60 UN member states and the European Union, the malicious use of cyberspace poses significant challenge in today's interconnected world, as states rely heavily on digital infrastructure for communication, commerce, and governance. Cyberspace enables our most basic systems to function, our economies, and democratic institutions, said Linda Thomas Greenfield, U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN. And yet, far too many state actors and non-state actors have taken an opposite tack.
Across the world, they have exploited digital connectivity to extort victims for profit, steal money and ideas from governments and private entities. They target journalists and human rights defenders, preposition for future conflict, and threaten our critical infrastructure, including here at the United Nations.
The framework for responsible state behavior in cyberspace, adopted repeatedly and by consensus, makes clear that international law applies in cyberspace and that states are expected to uphold voluntary norms of state behavior during peacetime, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. And yet, some who have endorsed that framework nevertheless choose to ignore or, worse, empower bad actors.
That includes malicious DPRK cyber operations, which are used to fund its weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs. And it includes Russia's cyber activity in Ukraine, Germany, Czechia, Lithuania, Poland, Slovakia, and Sweden, where, among other activities, Russia's General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate has targeted political parties and democratic institutions. Not only that, the Russian government has served as a safe haven for ransomware actors, who in recent years have caused billions of dollars of losses and significant damages to hospitals and other critical infrastructure.
We call on every state to do their part and to implement the framework and promote peace and stability in cyberspace, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
Whether it's considering how peacekeeping operations can promote good cyber hygiene to limit risk, or better understanding how cybersecurity could enhance nonproliferation efforts, this council must continue to view challenges through the lens of cybersecurity.
Let us affirm, reaffirm the applicability of international law to state-on-state behavior, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Let us promote adherence to voluntary norms of responsible state behavior in peacetime and help reduce the risk of conflict stemming from cyber incidents. And let us uphold the rules-based international order and ensure that the digital world impacts the physical world for better.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.